Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches. And that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on our social media platforms at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now Jim Andrews continues his current study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us again on The Final Word. Before I launch today's exposition, I want to make our listening audience aware of not only the books that I have authored, but some articles that I have written and tell you how to access them. Over the years, I have done a good deal of writing, as time allows, to prepare resources that I think should be helpful to you, our listeners. If you will go to jimandrewsbooks.com, that's one word, jimandrewsbooks.com, you will find there information describing the books I have authored, one of them co-authored with my daughter. On the same website, you'll see a tab that says Articles. You will discover there are some articles that I produced over the years that you may find interesting and helpful. For example, one of the most recent articles was my take on the demise of the culture wars and where I think we ought to go from here. Another article that appeared several years ago in a journal for biblical manhood and womanhood is entitled Boundaries Without Bonds. Another is a rebuttal of a tract that appeared several years back. The author attempted cleverly, but as I will show unsuccessfully, to persuade us that the Scriptures do not condemn homosexual practice. After all, that has all been a misunderstanding. Well, there will be others, but I mentioned those three. I'm not a regular blogger, but when sometimes things pop up on my radar that I feel I would like to address in a thoughtful way, I will sometimes produce a longer article like some of these. So I'm just happy to share them with you for whatever benefit they may have. Now, our current series is out of the margins for us. It is topical rather than expositional. The latter is our forte and always will be. But as we've said, some topics do not lend themselves to that treatment because one has to reach all over the Bible to find the precepts and principles that deal with what we're talking about. We've explained that when it comes to marriage, you're not just looking for what the Scriptures say about marriage per se, but other social principles, other life principles and precepts that have their application within a marriage. And today is one of those. I want to go to one text, for example, 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 20 through 21, which has no reference at all to marriage, but embedded in it is a principle that we ought to bring to our domestic life. The Apostle Paul, in chapter 8, verses 20 and 21, was talking about gifts that had been given by the church for the relief of the saints. Those gifts were going to be administered by him and those that were in his company. And in that process, they wanted to take precaution that no one should discredit us in our administration of this generous gift, this gift of money. And here is the larger principle, for we have regard for what is honorable, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. In marriage without remorse, it is crucial to be fiscally responsible. No amount of money can buy a happy marriage, but irresponsible financial habits can ensure a miserable one and perhaps a lot of discredit to ourselves, and not only discredit to ourselves, but dishonor to the Lord, whose name we own. It is common knowledge that one of the greatest contributors to broken-down marriages is acquisitive, materialistic couples getting in over their heads financially, and then bickering and blame-gaming start tearing them apart. For some reason, modern couples seem to have a sense of materialistic entitlement. Fewer and fewer seem to know the first thing about delaying gratification of pleasure. The advertising world tells us that we need it, we want it, we just have to have it, and must have it sooner rather than later. It's ridiculous. No matter what it costs, our kids must go everywhere, have seen everything, have done everything almost before they can crawl. No matter that we spend so much on them that they will be bored numb by the time they're early teenagers, couples still go in debt for all of that stuff. Consequently, we wind up in paper, buying houses, buying cars, taking vacations, doing all of this stuff until we're almost suffocated, and our credibility for the Lord Jesus Christ suffers in the process. So let me give you some guidelines for being physically responsible in marriage. First of all, be careful to live strictly within your means. I refer you here to the Gospel of Luke, chapter 14, verses 28 through 30. The Lord taught his disciples, "But which of you, when he wants to build a tower, does not first sit down and calculate the cost? I mean, how much am I going to have to pay for this? And see in advance if he has enough to complete it." I'm paraphrasing slightly, so we'll get the sense. "If he doesn't do that, when he has laid the foundation, and then suddenly finds out he's out of money already, and he's not able to finish it, all who observe it will begin to ridicule him. He'll make a fool of himself. They will say, 'This man began to build, and he was not able to finish,' implying, 'That was stupid. He should have counted the cost before he started.' And so it is, we who are married, as well as unmarried, before we go out and start spending ourselves blind, should learn to sit down and count the cost and see, really, do I bring in enough on a weekly or monthly basis to actually pay for this and to take care of my other necessities?" Here's a little advice. Never spend unnecessarily in excess of your ability to pay. Now, that's so simple, it seems almost ludicrous to have to say it, but I guarantee you, you have to say it to a lot of folk today. Never. Just make that a rule. Never spend unnecessarily in excess of your ability to pay. And watch that plastic. That seems to be the refuge of last resort to most people. And those rates on those cards are mafia rates. You'd probably get a better deal from the mafia. You'll put yourself so deep in the hole you'll never get out. I've known people that were carrying plastic debt up to $100,000. The interest rates on that amount of money made it virtually impossible, unless someone hit the lottery, to ever get out of that. Remember, folks, delay gratification until you can afford to pay what you want to buy. And thirdly, talking about living strictly within your means, never go in debt for anything you don't really need. Capitalize that. Now, obviously, we need a home. Sometimes we can rent, and sometimes it makes a lot more sense to buy. But don't go into debt for anything you don't really need. Other things can wait until we have saved up enough money in order to do it. Secondly, talking about being financially, fiscally responsible as a believer, and for the sake of your home. Because when we've got irresponsible financial habits, it's just going to almost ensure some pretty miserable days living together. Romans chapter 13 has a verse that's sometimes misunderstood, but it sets out a principle that is very applicable here. We'll explain it. Paul said, "Owe nothing to anyone except to love one another, for he who loves his neighbor has fulfilled the law." He's been talking about, in verse 7, rendering to all what is due them, tax to whom tax is due, custom to whom custom, fear or reverence, respect to whom fear, reverence, or respect, and honor to whom honor. In other words, do your duty to all. Owe nothing to anyone except the one debt that we can never fulfill, which is to love one another. Refuse to bring reproach upon the Lord by creating an ill odor with your fiscal mismanagement, because as we saw in 2 Corinthians 8, 20 and 21, it is important not only to be honorable in the sight of God, but to be honorable in the sight of men as well, and to manage our funds in such a way that we bring credit rather than discredit upon that great name by which we have been saved and induced family we have been brought. When misfortune strikes, make every conscientious effort to show good faith and to settle with your creditors. I remember in our days when we were living in Denver, 1970 to 1980, there was a man in our church who was a major financial player in the city. His name will go unmentioned, though I'm going to mention the circumstance in an honorable way. He had once been in the Dallas, Texas area, he had done some major projects down there. He did some major projects in Denver that even if people didn't know his name, they would remember those projects. But the Dallas deal, as I've understood the story, went south. You know, we had one of these cycles that we have in our country when things got depressed. And there was, as I recall, a recession at that time. And that project went under. Well, he moved to Denver and he was making money. But just because he had to file for bankruptcy doesn't mean that he didn't pay back his creditors. He did something what few did. He was a Christian man. And it was my understanding that he paid back every dime of what he owed. Now, that is really a man of honor. Well, we Christians ought to be people that owe no man anything. Now, that verse does not mean, when it says owe no man anything, and that has been greatly misinterpreted by some, it doesn't mean that we should never go in debt for anything. Look, I buy a home, I'm paying the mortgage on a monthly basis. The creditors are not out there saying, you owe me money. No, not unless I'm behind on the payments. They don't regard me as being in arrears. It's not as though they're setting out there saying, this man is not paying me what he owes me. You go buy a car and you make payments. Some people may buy it outright, but most of us probably have to make payments. We're not in arrears until we're in arrears. Otherwise, we're meeting a schedule agreed to by us and the creditor doesn't feel badly toward us at all. In fact, he's very happy with us as long as we're making our payment. So it is not the spirit of that verse to owe no man anything to say that we should never acquire any debt. We should never require any debt that we don't repay, is the idea, and bring reproach on the Lord by creating an ill odor with our fiscal mismanagement. So live strictly within your means and pay your debts. Not only will your reputation as a Christian benefit from that, the name of God will not be slurred, will not be shamed by our fiscal irresponsibility, but we'll live a lot happier with one another as spouses if, in fact, we keep things financially level. Another principle in this regard, marriage without regret, be fiscally responsible, save for a rainy day. You can't afford to spend what you ought to be saving. Now, there's nothing like the 11th commandment on this, but a good figure is 10% of your net earnings is a good figure. Some people simply may not be able to do that, but that is a good place to start. And thirdly, I would suggest that you adjust your standard of living to your means after savings. Put away a reasonable amount of savings each week or each month, depending on how you are paid. Do that as you're able. And then, with what you have left, adjust your standard of living to your means. I mean, if you can't afford to eat out every night, I'm exaggerating, then don't do it. I remember when my wife and I were raising our children, we had, as I think I've mentioned, for years and years, almost poverty-level wages. My wife was an excellent manager. For example, she would never take the kids to a fast food place like McDonald's and order two Happy Meals. No, they weren't at those age. They weren't going to eat two Happy Meals. She bought one. And she divvied up the fries and she divvied up the hamburger and all of that. And she's not going to do like a lot of people would do. I see it all the time. Go in, they're going to sit down, they're going to eat, and they order a large drink. Why in the world would you order a large drink and pay that much for it? I mean, this is small things, but small things add up. When, as a matter of fact, you can order a small drink and go back and refill as many times as you want to while you're sitting there eating. Sometimes we just don't think. So adjust your standard of living to your means after savings. Do you really need two cars and a truck? Well, if you don't, and you're running so very, very tight you complain each month, then unload a vehicle. My wife and I are in a little different situation than most, but for years, for I believe at least 19 years, I honestly can't remember for sure, but for most of this time, we've had one car. But because we work in the same office, that works for us. Naturally, that wouldn't work for people who are in different positions, and we understand that. But what I'm saying is adjust as you are able. Scale down your standard of living so that you can live within your means. Number four, be sensible. That's always a good rule. Titus 2:12, we are instructed to deny ungodliness and worldly desires and to live sensibly, righteously, and godly in this present age. I'm focusing upon that first one, live sensibly. For example, that word has broad application, not only in financial areas, but moral areas and other things. But in the financial areas, never pay interest on a plastic card. Ossie and I have always had a plastic card. If you can't handle one, cut them up. But if you can, and we have the discipline to do so, we never pay interest on plastic. If you can pay off your house in 15 years while things are good, be smart. Don't spend it again on boats and cars and a lot of things that you don't really need. I don't know what your needs are. I know what people's wants are, but I'm talking about needs. But if you don't need those things, then trim back and pay off that house in 15 years. You'll save yourself bukus of money. And when you go to buy a car on low interest or no interest. We've typically turned over our car. This one's going a little longer, about every 5 or 6 years. We could run them longer, but we've got good reasons for not doing so, I think. But the point is, when we go to buy a car, we always seek out a very low interest deal. And a time or two, we've gotten them on no interest. But of course, that means you have to pay them off fast. But we've been prepared to pay them off fast and not have to pay any interest. The bottom line here is do everything you can to keep from paying interest. You're just slopping somebody else's hogs. Why do that? D. Under be sensible. Avoid buying anything at the full price as much as possible. You don't always have to pay the full price. You can dicker. I've been amazed at watching my wife in certain situations. Dicker. She is good. She very seldom pays the full price. Now, we all know there are things out there. There is no negotiating. So if you need it and you have to get it, well, then you're going to have to pay the tariff. But sometimes that's simply not the case. Another principle under being sensible, never buy what is free. I mentioned a couple of examples of that a little earlier. Why buy a large Coke at a fast food when you can refill by ordering a small cup? Why buy a boatload of French fries when most kids never eat half of them? That kind of thing. Again, these things are not life game breakers. They're not going to bust up a family, but it's those kind of habits and it's that kind of thinking that lead people into all kinds of trouble, because if we do that in small things, we'll probably do that in large things. And try to avoid setting yourself up for excess. For example, is it the smartest time to grocery shop when you're hungry? I think we've all been there, and no, that's really not the best time to shop. Talking about being sensible. Watch throwing away good money on hot labels. I mean, my goodness, people go out and they get a pair of jeans, and they may look nice. They'll pay $200, $250 for a pair of jeans. Really now? Do they look that much better? Do they fit that much better than jeans that cost much, much less? Well, some may think so, but you couldn't prove it by my eye. And then, being sensible, budget your money. Going back to that clothes thing. Are they really better clothes? Don't buy labels unless your money is equal to your vanity, because the relative quality of those things is rarely equal to the quantity of money you're putting out in most cases. And frankly, most people aren't even going to notice the difference. You may say, well, you're wrong about that. I would be with some people, but I'm saying most people, I don't think so. And ask yourself, is there a way to have the same thing for much less? Every year, my wife and I, for the last 15 years, we go to Naples, Florida, and we spend quite a bit of time down there, and it's an upscale area, and there are a lot of nearly new shops there. Well, things aren't always cheap, but they're a whole lot more economical, and they're still very, very good, and you get it for much less than you can get it in the department stores or specialty shops. And remember this, talking about living sensibly. Patience in purchasing usually rewards the buyer. So delay gratification as long as you can, and use a little patience, and you'll probably come up with something that'll save you a lot of money and not put your finances under so much stress. Now, this is last, but it's not least. This goes to the head of the class, this bit of advice in living fiscally responsible. Honor God with the first fruits of your harvest. Proverbs chapter 3. This will be familiar territory to many of you. This is just a reminder. But verses 5 through 9 says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. Don't be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. It'll be healing to your body and refreshment to your bones. And then he adds, honor the Lord from your wealth and from the first of all your produce. So your barns will be filled with plenty, and your vats will overflow with new wine. That is not a flat-out promise that if you give a dollar to God, you'll get $2 back. but it is in accordance with the principle that we shall reap as we sow. Let me talk about honoring God with the first fruits of your harvest. The first thing that many people, usually young people, say, I can't afford to. No, you can't afford to because in many cases you've spent on yourself and you've spent yourself blind. That's why you can't afford to. That's not in every case, but that is in many cases. The truth is this, that it really means in many cases you're afraid to. It means that you can't trust God enough with your finances to just let go and give to God what is appropriate, to honor Him in the way that is appropriate. Or it could mean you, as I said, you can't afford to and live like you prefer to. And that is pure selfishness and unfaithfulness. And it's no wonder that we, as the book of Haggai teaches us, we've got holes in our pockets. God has put them there. So we've got a dollar, but it seems like it always takes us $2. We're always behind. In reality, you simply can't afford not to, my friends, for you're just biting the hand that feeds you, and you're offending the God who provides for you. Honor God with the first fruits. To blow off God is more perilous than blowing off the IRS. You don't want to do that. Well, there's the myth, I can't afford to, the truth. You simply can't afford not to, and the means. Always generously assist those who are in legitimate need. There again, Proverbs chapter 11, verse 24, teaches us about that very principle. It is this, there is one who scatters, yet increases all the more. That is, he's liberal, and yet somehow it seems like the miracle, the feeding of the 5,000. There is one who withholds what is justly due, but it results only in one. He's got a pocket with holes. My friends, give generously to assist those in legitimate need. Refuse to enable the irresponsible to continue their undisciplined and profligate ways. The Apostle Paul said, look, those among you, if they will not work, don't let them eat. And partner in the gospel, as Philippians 1:5 and chapter 4, verse 5 teaches. Step up with the resources that God has given you and be generous in helping the poor and the legitimately needy and in partnering in the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ, because when we are good stewards of our funds, that is exactly what we're doing. Some may be able to preach, and some are able to support those who do the teaching work. Either way, both are blessed and both are honoring God. Questions for God's stewards to ask in money management are these. As a steward of God, is my conscience comfortable with this expenditure? That is, do I or does my family need this? A next question. Does this purchase make economic sense? If it doesn't, don't make it. Thirdly, will this expenditure put me or my family in a deep hole that puts us under extreme financial pressure and at necessary risk and put perilous pressure on our marriage? Ask this, will this outlay tempt or cause me to rob God to fend off creditors? Fifth question, do I dare cheat God to feather my own nest? Sixth question, am I spoiling my family? Are they being overindulged materially? Am I giving them too much, too soon, or simply too much? And finally, ask yourself, can I give to God a good account of my financial stewardship? If you ask yourself that question and you find you can't, you need to make some adjustments. Friends, this is good for your relationship with God to consider all these things. It's good for your marriage because, as I say, when you get your wires crossed financially, you not only put yourself in a position where you dishonor God, but you put yourself in a position where you're putting awful pressure upon your marriage. If you don't have to go in some of those directions, don't go there. Well, thank you, friends, for joining us on The Final Word. God bless you and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. Our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program has ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.